Hi, my name is John Degenkolb. I'm from Trek Segafredo. And four things about Canada. Maple syrup.
When Juanma said, do it for your family, and I was starting to die, I thought of that, and I thought of Hunter, and I thought of my wife, and I just drew on that as inspiration, and focused on that, and I was able to hold on to the win.
Hello, welcome to the first episode of the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. I'm Matthew Piaro, editor of the magazine, website, and now of this podcast. Just like the magazine and the website, we're excited to bring you great cycling stories from across the country and around the world. We'll talk to pros, we'll talk gear, we'll talk riding, we'll talk training. It'll be bikes, but with a Canadian twist, eh? Let's look ahead to what we have in this episode. Canadian road cycling superstar Michael Woods opens up about his emotional victory on one of the toughest stages of the Vuelta a España. Dan Walker, social media editor, and I talk about the just-opened cyclocross season and what we might expect from some of Canada's top men and women in cross. And James Piccoli, a rider for the UCI Continental Team Elevate KHS, takes us on his favorite ride up into Mont-Royal Park, right in downtown Montreal. But first, on one of the most challenging stages in the Vuelta a España, he reigned in Spain. Michael Woods of EF Education First Dropback, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
It is the day after the Vuelta just wrapped up. How are you feeling?
Still riding a bit of a high, a bit tired too at the same time. I just arrived in Girona. My teammate and I, Mitch Stocker, we just narrowly made our train connection because we had a late night last night having great drinks and a nice meal, and barely made it on the train and got on the train. And now I'm sitting in my apartment in Girona, hanging out with my wife and feeling pretty good.
Nice, nice. And your stage 17 win was about 5 days ago. It was significant for many reasons, but with 5 days having passed, have you had a chance to think about it a bit more? Has it processed a bit more?
For sure. I'm pretty, in a lot of ways, I'm pretty tired now because I've woken up the last few nights just excited, really happy with how I did. And yeah, like, I'm having a lot more difficulty falling asleep just because I'm excited. I had a lot of time to think about it. And also, so many people have messaged me, and so many friends, family, fans have messaged me and just said so many wonderful things to me that I'm still kind of riding a bit of a high.
Returning to the race or the stage itself, on that final climb, the numbers I have are it's 7.3 kilometers, average 9.7% gradient. There's kicks of like 24%, maybe 25%. Now, into the, let's say, the last 600 meters, you were with Dylan Toons, David De La Cruz, Rafael Mica. Now, is that climb, and with those riders, is it strength or tactics that is key here, or both, or to what extent?
It's certainly both. Particularly on that type of, first of all, that climb really favors me, because although it says it averages 9%, it's not an indicator of how difficult it is, because there's so many flat plateaus on it. So it's almost like a steps climb where you just had 15 to 20% grades and then 2, 1, even 0% grades. And I find I tend to ride really well in that environment, that type of, it favors a guy who's more of like an Ardennes specialist, more of a punchy rider. But also, you know, if you don't follow the right guy and he gets enough of a gap, particularly at this level, particularly with that class of those, that level of riders in the group, even if you're 5% better than those guys, which wouldn't be the case, like if they get a few meters on you, it's over. You can't give an advantage to a guy like Rafa Mica at all. because he'll just ride away. He'll eventually ride away, and you just can't make up that gap. It's too hard. It's not physically possible. So you have to play it really well. And in the past, I hadn't played those scenarios well because either I was complacent. I'd settle for the second or third place because that was a big result for me, or I would screw it up just because I was too excited and overthink it or show my cards too early and attack. But this time, because I really drew on those experiences where I messed it up and just kind of sat back and realized that I could win and I had to be patient.
Have you finally learned patience? Is that sort of what you're saying?
I've never been a really patient guy in general. Patience isn't my strong suit. But yeah, certainly there's a lot of self-talk going on up the final climb. Just telling myself, be cool, you can win this, relax, those type of things.
And there was some other talk that you're receiving from your director. When did he start yelling in your ear?
So Wama is an amazing director. I'm so fortunate to have him as a director. He's been my personal, the way our team works is we have between 5 and 6 directors each season, and the directors take on a certain number of riders personally as well, just to keep them up to date, what's going on with the team, strategies, all that kind of stuff. So Wama has been my personal director since I started with the team. We've built up this great relationship, and I really look up to him. He's done 26 Grand Tours. So he really has great insight and great knowledge of the races. And yeah, he's communicating to me throughout the day and throughout the race. And when we were going up the final kilometer of the climb, I couldn't see anything. There's tons of fog. The fans were insane. They're amazing. Basque Country fans are the best. They're shouting, and you couldn't see up the road at all because a lot of them were standing in the way. And Dylan Toons attacked. He got a bit of a gap on me, but I knew if I brought him back and then just came over top of him, I'd break him. And I assumed because of how hard he attacked, we only had maybe 150, 200 meters to go. But I caught him, came over top of him, and realized he was cracked and thought, this is it. I'm going to hold on for the win. Looked up and I saw a sign, 500 meters. And it was super steep still. And instead of it being 150 meters left, what I thought it was, I still had 2 minutes left of suffering. So I heard Wanma actually come on the radio and say, 20 seconds left, man. You just have to hold on for 20 more seconds. And so I counted down in my head, 20. 19, 18, like all the way down to 1. I finished 20 seconds and looked up, and I still couldn't see the 300 meter sign to go. And they started yelling, "You're living the dream! You're living the dream!" And I wasn't living the dream at all. I was suffering. I was hurting so bad. And then he said a line to me after that he actually told our mechanic who was in the car, 40K into the stage. He turned to the mechanic and said, "I've got Mike's in the brake. If it survives, I've got a line for him." And he said, "Do it for your family." Mm-hmm. And my wife and I had a really tough last several months. My wife's father passed away about 4 months ago, and then we lost our son, Hunter. We had a stillbirth. My wife was 37 weeks pregnant, and it was just a really hard moment. And after the death of Hunter, I really wanted to honor him and do something special for my wife. And I thought the best way to do that would be getting a big result at a big race. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I've been thinking about him every day since he passed, and think about my wife every day. But I was so focused on the race at that point that I wasn't truly like channeling that energy into the race. Mm-hmm. But then when Wanma said, "Do it for your family." Although Toons at that point was starting to come back on me, I was starting to die. I thought of that, and I thought of Hunter, and I thought of my wife, and I just drew on that as inspiration and focused on that, and I was able to hold on for the win.
That's quite a powerful line, and everybody I think who read that or heard it mentioned in interviews afterwards were taken by not only the story, your personal story, but just that line delivered at that time. Like that's some quite the sort of psychological insight on your director's part.
Oh, that's, I mean, it speaks volumes of how great of a director Wama is and how lucky I am to have him as a director. After I crossed the line and finally, like, collected myself and got into the podium room, my soigneur was there, Alyssa, and she passed me the phone. She was on the phone with him. I just had this massive outpouring of emotion. What he said is what got me that result. And I just started to bawl, and I just told him, thank you, man. Thank you.
I understand he was crying too.
Yeah. When we met on the bus after, we gave each other a big hug, and he was like, I don't think I've ever felt like that ever in a race. And he was just like, I was crying like a baby.
When you cross the line, there's some really interesting footage that I don't want to bring up. You cross the line. Your soigneur, who you mentioned, Alyssa, sort of helps you. You put your head down on your bars, your handlebar. Your face is buried, and we can hear you gasping. What are you thinking right there at that moment? Are you trying to collect yourself? What's going on?
So I think what Wama said to me drove me to a place where I don't think I've ever been in a bike race before. And normally I've won in the past. When I've won, I'm able to put both hands up in the air. I'm able to celebrate. And I couldn't lift both hands off the bars. I lifted one hand up to celebrate and then collapsed. I was cooked. And I spent the better part of probably 30 seconds to a minute just trying to get over how much I hurt. I thought of nothing else at that point, just how much I was suffering, like trying to wrap my... And finally, after about 30 seconds, maybe a minute, I finally started kind of coming out of the pain, started recovering a bit, and then started being able to realize I just won the race. Yeah. Pretty sweet.
Cycling is famously about suffering. It's a word that comes up a lot in the sport. It's mostly physical, can also be mental. But you... Just about speaking about the stillborn birth of your son, Hunter, it's been a big emotional, like, let's call it emotional pain. Does the physical suffering do anything for the emotional pain that you've faced in the last 2 months?
Certainly. I think I'm really fortunate to have cycling. I think it's a very cathartic. Both my wife and I are very active people in general. Even if I wasn't a professional athlete, I'd be doing some type of activity on a regular basis. And it really enabled me to help grieve and deal with the death of Hunter. And my wife runs every day. And she even started hiking the day after the birth. She's my hero. She's an inspiring woman. And she just did a trail half marathon 2 weeks ago, and I think we're both really helping us cope with the loss of the little guy and look forward to the future.
And the win, like that idea of do it for your family helped you, and has the win further helped you afterwards? Has it provided more catharsis for you and your wife and your family?
Yeah, I think so. It's been, I didn't plan on saying anything about losing Hunter, until Wama said those words to me over the radio, do it for your family. But that's what drove me to get to the finish line. And it's the reason why I said something in the post-race interview. And since then, it's really kind of, I'm really happy I did say something, because both my wife and I really found, we found a lot of help from people who had gone through similar situations. And we felt that it really helped us cope with the shock of, you know, having first thinking you're going to have this beautiful baby boy to him being taken away from you. It helped us realize that this does happen, And I'm now really, after receiving so many amazing messages from people in Spain, people in Canada, people throughout the world, saying that they've gone through something similar, and what's happened to me has helped them. And I'm really touched.
Next up for you is the World Championships. And in a way, it's sort of bringing the old band back together. And what I mean by that is your teammates will be Antoine Duchesne and Hugo Uhl, who you rode with at Rio. Yeah. And we have the addition of Rob Britton this year, or for this race. How do you think, what other similarities might there be with Rio and Innsbruck, not just the addition of Rob Britton?
Well, Rio was a big disappointment for me, just because I really felt like it was a course that suited me. And I was really excited to perform well on that course and do something special. And I think, although I was lacking in experience at that point, I did have the ability to do a good result. However, I broke my femur at the Tour of Poland 3 weeks before, and I just wasn't the same rider at that race. And despite the incredible work that Antoine and Hugo did for me at that race, they did an exceptional job. I came into the third last climb. We discussed this pre-race, having me in great position for that third last climb, and I was sitting probably between fifth and tenth wheel going into that climb. Antoine and Hugo just did an exceptional job. I wasn't able to deliver. Whereas this year, I think the course may even be more challenging, if not as challenging as Rio. But I feel, obviously I don't have a broken femur, mm-hmm. and I feel like I'm a more experienced rider. Like I mentioned, being able to draw on previous failures in that final kilometer on stage 17, I have a bigger array of experience that I can draw upon at this race. And I've done several races of this duration, of this level of difficulty, and now had some success. So I'm not going into something that I don't know. I'm going into something that's more familiar. And again, having Antoine and Hugo with such great World Tour experience, being such great, well-seasoned domestiques, I'm very excited to be part of that team. Rob, I think, has really displayed he's a great climber over the past several years. He hasn't really proven himself in Europe yet. However, I think the way he rode in the breakaway at the Grand Prix in Montreal, Quebec, I think he can be really useful at this World Championships, especially if we can get him up the road.
Michael Woods, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
My name is Michael Valgren Anderson, and I'm riding for Pro Team Astana. And when I think about Canada, I think about maple syrup, big trucks. It's where they speak French here also. And then beautiful city, Quebec.
Dan Walker, Canadian Cycling Magazine social media editor.
Hello, Matthew. You know what time it is?
What time is it?
It's time for a game I like to call Full Send, No Send.
Full Send, No Send.
You know how to play this?
I have a sense. This is from all your mountain biking?
Something like that. It's kind of like an adaption of buy or sell.
Okay.
I'm going to throw out a statement.
Yep.
You're going to go full send or you're going to go no send.
I got it.
All right. Ellen Noble will win a World Cup this year.
This sounds disparaging, but I don't think that's a full send.
Is that a no send? Half send?
I'm going to say no send.
No send.
I think she hits the... I'm not going to extend this metaphor. I think it's a no send. I think she had a fabulous race at Waterloo, but I think the sludgy mud of Europe may not be her
I agree.
Forte.
I think that was her opportunity to win it. That's a course that's really great for her. American dry, dusty style cross courses. Jingle Cross might be that, but she was there. She had every chance to win, and I think it'll be a good lesson, but I think that was her time.
Okay, let me hit you with one. Wout van Aert will be plagued by his sponsorship woes, and it will be a deterrent to his success on the cross course. Wow, that was succinct, Nespa.
That's full a full send for me.
That's a full send.
Full send.
So unpack that full send, please.
Unpack that? Okay. There's a lot of logistical issues he's going to manage. That's what's all done by the team before. The guy's not very old, only 24. He is going to have to manage transportation, bikes, mechanics, all that. If he can do it getting over to Canada, or getting over to the United States, sorry, that's impressive. Belgium should be easier where he's got a better network, but you know, he's going to be tied up in court. He's going to have all these distractions about contracts, negotiations, maybe repayment for a broken contract. Full send for me. It's going to be a distraction.
Okay.
Okay, my turn. Full send, no send, Canadian performances at Waterloo.
Oh, there's got to be a more nuanced version of full or no send. I mean, it's a bummer that Magalie Rochette was a DNF, but I totally think it was a wise move if she had a health concern. I mean, Michael Vandenham, national champion, he did quite well at, I think he was 29th, but I don't know, he was coming out of a head cold. He had poison ivy. So, I mean, kudos for toughing it out through that stuff. Gunnar Holmgren, the young Canadian rider, he did really well in the elite men's race, 35th. I mean, that's a good performance. He's done well in Europe before, so I think this is, I hope, an indication of some sendage, future sendage for Gunnar Holmgren.
As a mountain bike racer as well, it's a guy who knows how to send it.
I'm sure he can send it.
All right, last one. Full send, no send.
No, I'll send it. I'll give you the full send, no send.
You'll give me the full send, no send?
Yeah, oh, I got it. Full send, no send. And I think the answer is even in the question, tail whips.
How is this not a full send?
I know. I think it's just obvious.
You got to love a guy having that much fun when he wins. First World Cup victory. Good gap on Wout. But, you know, if he falls, there's still a chance Wout comes back. You just see the joy on his face when he crossed the line when he was in the finishing chute. How can you not love that kind of enthusiasm from a pro racer? You don't always see that, but Tunerts gets his first World Cup victory in the hometown of his sponsor at the Trek World Cup race on a Trek. Checks a lot of boxes, and he had a great time doing it. That's what Cross is about.
That's a lot of full sending right there. All right, another full send is going to be our continued coverage of Cross throughout the season. We're looking forward to Jingle Cross this weekend, and for sure we're looking forward to stuff here at home. There's the Pan Am Championships in Midland, Ontario, and there's also Cross Nats in Peterborough, and both of those are partnered with C2 Races. There's going to be really cool CX action to come.
I'm Nathan Haas. I ride for Katusha Alpecin. The first things I come to think about when I think about Canada is Mike Woods. Every time he speaks to me, he goes, "Oh, hey, bud." And then the second thing is probably Larry the Enticer, the guy that just sends it. I think he represents Canada pretty well. The next thing is poutine and how it's probably the most disgusting looking food in the world. We tried it last night and could not handle more than two bites. But four, it's just good memories of cycling. I used to do the World Cups in Mont-Saint-Anne in Vermont in World Cup mountain biking. And always coming to Quebec and Montreal for the road race is just so much fun. So it's, even though in winter, you know, you guys do well to get through and suffer. But yeah, it's one of the best places to ride bikes.
Hello. I'm Philippe Tremblay, web editor at Canadian Cycling Magazine. In September, the day before the Grand Prix Cycliste de Montréal, I rode with James Spicoli. You might know him as the winner of this year's Tour de Beauce, the first Canadian in 10 years to do so. The Montreal native rides for the Elevate KHS team. At the Grand Prix races, he was part of the national team. As part of a regular segment on the podcast, we're going to let riders take us along some of the favorite routes, whether on road, gravel, single track, or at a BMX park. Piccoli took me up Kemnayud, at Mount Royal in Montreal. He spoke about the road's importance to him as a rider and as a person.
We are on Kemnayud right now, Mount Royal. We're at the road circuit for the 2018 Grand Prix Cycliste de Montréal. And we're on the climb of my youth. It's a little cheesy, but that's what it is. I started riding for fun with my dad when I was probably 12 or 13 years old. And this is the longest climb in the area. And so I always found climbing the coolest side of the sport. So I would come here with my dad and try and race him up, or come here alone and see how fast I can get to the top and time myself and test myself. And this is probably the place outside of my own home that I've been the most in my life. Seriously, and I've been here in the winter, summer, spring, fall, every sort of day. Been here doing loops. I've ever stood on this road. I did that this year. That was fun. 12 hours of up and down. I've done a lot of riding here. I think the first year the Grand Prix Cycliste was maybe 2010. And I was just starting to ride seriously. I think that was a year or two before I started racing. And I came to watch the race, and it was obviously, it came up Kemnayud, and I really said to myself, like, wow, I wonder if one day, you know, I'll ever be there. You know, it would be so amazing to race on my home climb, you know, in my hometown, where I come all the time to train and just get away and ride. Maybe one day I'll be in the race. And this year, I am. It's pretty crazy. It definitely gave me a place to train, you know. Like, I don't think I'd be as good of a climber if I didn't have access to this road. I mean, and if I wasn't a good climber, I don't think I'd be a very good cyclist. You know, so, I mean, I really give this road a lot of credit for just being a place that I can ride and get away and retreat if I was having a, you know, stressful day. Or, you know, it really formed me as a cyclist. And when I became more serious about training, it gave me like a yardstick to judge myself by and push myself by every day, you know? And it really formed me into the cyclist I am now. So it's 1.6 to 1.7 kilometers, depending on where you start. It's 119 meters of elevation gain, 7.3%. I have all these blades of grass named if you want to know who those are. But so the climb starts out at the bottom, steep pitch, maybe 200 to 300 meters. And then we have the false flat section that we're on now, that I call the false flat. It's maybe 3 or 4%. And then the last kilometer is the most sustained, and it's around 8 or 9. And it's really where you make up the most time on the climb, because it's the steepest, steadiest part. You can see a K to go right there. So like I said, I've always tested myself here, and I've always tried to see how fast I can get up, you know? And it's always been like a personal challenge. And so I actually go much faster than I do in the race, because I only have to do it once when I go hard. Yeah. In the race, you know, the guys know that it comes up 16 times, so you can only really go hard a time or two, you know? So I don't by any means think I'm way better than all the climbers that come here, but I do get a good shot at it when I'm at home. And so that's why I can go faster.
I think everyone has rides that they test themselves on, have like their own yardsticks. You know, I don't know if anyone has ridden the same road as much as I've ridden here, you know, especially in Europe where you have such a variety of climbs to do. But I mean, I think everyone has a similar sort of experience with cycling. They have
whether it's a road or a ride or a group of friends, they have a source of comfort, you know, that they're used to. And that means a lot in a cycling context.
James Piccoli is a Montreal native and rider for the Elevate KHS team.
Thanks for listening to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. That was our first episode, and we have many more coming at you very soon. It was put together by Dan Walker, Philippe Tremblay, and me, Matthew Piaro. This episode was produced by Adam Killick. Please subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, please leave us a review. If you want to give us some feedback, there's podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca. You can shoot us an email right there. Also, for news and reviews, head over to cyclingmagazine.ca. Special thanks to the Ontario Media Development Corporation for its support. So stay tuned. We have more stuff coming for you. Until then, keep the rubber side down.
My name is Matej Makoric. I ride for Team Bahrain Merida. The four things that come to my mind when I think about Canada are very polite people, maple syrup, cold winters, and wide roads.